talking about cars. 2024 is here, and within the next 12 months, so will be the next Dodge Charger. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about people buying new cars like crazy. Sales figures are dropping. They're coming out now, and there are some surprises. We're also going to talk about a million-mile Toyota Tundra truck from new to very not new.
Very close.
We're getting there, and then we're going to have some fun with a really quirky Suzuki and some rad toy trucks called Stompers. So, friends, it's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. I am back. Mr. Chris Bruce is with me. Bruce, you were solo last week, and you killed it, man.
Did my best, you know, in terms of audience online. I did pretty well, so I didn't do too bad.
You and the Ramblers, I don't even need to be here. Ramblers
came out to help me, so that was nice.
I do not even need to be here. I tuned in.
Co-host.
Yes, that was wonderful. I tuned in. And I did catch the question from Ted Adam Green. We were just talking about, can you buy an EV for under $25,000?
I was going to save that till the end, but I've got it pulled up right now. So funny you should ask that, Ted Adam Green, because the answer is apparently yes. Our pals over at Inside EVs, they are our sister site. We collaborate. They are all under the Motor One umbrella, but all of the electric.
We're all a big happy fan. There.
Yeah, exactly. We share teams and all that sort of stuff. So Inside EVs is Motor One. Motor One is Inside EVs. But anyway, to get on with that, it turns out so a 2023 Bolt EV costs $27,495. Now, the way that the government tax credits have changed, you can apply that $7,500 tax credit when you buy a vehicle. You don't have to wait for tax season and then take it off. You can apply it immediately. And that means out the door, you can get a base Bolt for $19,995. So Ted Adam Green, you asked me, when do I think you'll be able to buy a new electric car for less than $25,000? And apparently the answer is right now.
With the tax credit plugged in. But it's close. But it's even close without. And also the Nissan Leaf. I don't have the pricing pulled up right in front of me, but I believe a new Nissan Leaf is right there around $27,000-$28,000. So it's close.
Yep. The other cool thing, and this is writer Andrew Lamprecht. I just butchered his name. Lamprecht. Sorry. Put a P in there instead of a B. He also notes that since a credit goes on as soon as you purchase the vehicle, you are paying the tax rate for a $19,995 car rather than a $27,000 car. So you are getting it even cheaper than you would get anyway. So he put it. So for California, for example, there's a 7.25% tax. That means you're saving $543.75 in tax by doing it this way. So pretty cool stuff. So yeah, you can buy a brand new EV for just a shade under $20,000.
And whoa, Nelly, have people been buying new cars in 2023? We're going to get to that in a bit. But it's what, January 3rd as we're talking here. Yep. And where are we talking, by the way? Live Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com on X, aka Twitter, Motor One on YouTube.
We're not calling it X ever again.
It's always going to be Twitter. I know. And for our audio listeners, we still love you. We always love you. You're getting us every Friday on Apple, Google, Podchaser, iHeartRadio, Amazon, Deezer, something else. There's like 13 or 14. I can never remember them all.
No.
I don't do New Year's resolutions. That's a New Year's resolution. One of these times, one of these shows, I'm gonna spend 5 minutes and go through every audio platform we're on. And we will watch the live viewer count just plummet. It's already dropping right now. Look,
too long for me to load. I was about to do it, but then the site took too long to load because we have a site that loses everything. Anyway, let's get this ball rolling.
Let's do it,
and let's talk about the new or upcoming Dodge Charger Daytona EV that is set to replace the current Challenger. And yeah, we've heard a lot about this, but we just put up a story. We have a series called Everything We Know. The it kind of does what it says on the tin. It is everything we know about the 2025 Dodge Charger Daytona. And so, yeah, Smith, if you could start a second, I will pull up a gap for us.
Yeah, well, let me talk a little bit about this. For starters, this is something that we want to try to do more this year. Some of the changes you'll see on Rambling About Cars. We have a lot of content like this that we don't always talk about on the podcast, but we want to try to bring a little bit more, I guess maybe regular cars or some news that might be a little more relevant to people buying now or buying in the future. So you're going to see more things like Everything We Know, more lists of some of the things that we put together. And we're starting here with the Dodge Charger. I want to point out, and I just want to make it clear, we don't have anything super fresh. Dodge didn't come out on January 2nd and say, oh, yeah, here's a big package. It's just, we know that 2024, later this year, the new Dodge Charger is going to debut. So now is a great time to put out a little packet just in one spot. Here's everything we know about the car. It's a mix of rumors and confirmed information. We try not to go too far on the really sketchy rumors just because, I mean, we strive to do a little bit better than that. If somebody's uncle's, brother's, sister's, former roommate hears something, we don't necessarily want to report on that. But if we can at least get a few sources coming together saying some of the same things, then we'll see what we can find out. So what have we found out? What do we know about the new Dodge Charger? Well, you know that the Charger Daytona SRT EV concept debuted August of 2022. So it's been like a year and a half since that concept debuted. It was said to foretell the future of the Charger going back to a two-door format. Of course, it's electric. Here's what we know that's confirmed. There's going to be an electric Charger.
There's going to be electric, but we kind of have to put a little asterisk next to that.
That's confirmed. Dodge said right off the bat, hey, it's electric. Do you remember the Fratzonic exhaust sound when it first debuted? Do you remember, Ramblers, if you've been around for a while, do you remember me saying, holy crap, they made it sound like the Wraith? The old Dodge M4S concept using that 1980s movie, The Wraith. It's going to have that electric sound. We know Dodge is still working on it because it wasn't long after that concept debut that we actually got a report saying, yeah, we're still working on it. And then SEMA that year, SEMA 2022, Dodge had another SRT, Charger Daytona SRT concept in red with a slightly different, a deeper exhaust tone. So we know that they're working on it. And of course, it's electric. It's a digital type exhaust. But we know that it's going to be electric. We know it's going to have some sound. They're trying to build it like a muscle car. We know there's going to be a Banshee model. Here's where things get a little more mysterious. So Banshee is said to replace basically the Hellcat. It's going to be the high performance version. How high performance? We've heard over 800 horsepower. We've heard close to 900 horsepower. There's still not an official thing on that. Yeah.
A rumored number. And then there would also be several versions lower than that. So theoretically, from what we've heard, base Charger Daytona would have 455 horsepower from its electric motor. There'd be several steps up from there.
Yep.
The top non-Banshee Charger would have 670 horsepower, allegedly, from what we know so far, which is still a ton of power.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 455 is still enough to scoot. And that's where it gets a little mysterious again, because and this is even mysterious on Dodge's part, because they went into SEMA 2022 and they showed the red concept and they said, here are six or nine potential powertrains. They were very keen to say potential. So they're not hedging their bets just yet, but we do know, okay, electric, different power ranges. The Banshee is supposed to have an 800 volt system. Everything below the Banshee is supposed to be 400 volts. So, I mean, there's certainly plenty of power that will be available in this car. The styling very much kind of pulls on your heartstrings of the older Chargers way back in the day when they were two doors. And as far as we know, it's going to be a two door liftback. We haven't heard anything that's suggesting otherwise. Now,
are
we ready to go a little bit further into Mysterio land here?
Is this where we're going to talk about the possible combustion engine? Is that time for here's, that?
I think it is. And here's where it gets a little interesting, especially for us, because I can't remember the exact date. I think it was it earlier? I believe it was early, fairly early in 2023. Reports came out that said, hey, the next Charger is actually going to be gas and the Hemi is going to live on and all of this other stuff. And we contacted a Dodge spokesperson directly. In fact, I talked to them directly.
Yeah, you were the one that did that story.
And we got an absolute, that rumor, that story is incorrect. The Hemi is dead in the Charger after the, you know, after the current generation, and the future is electric. And that was, it's rare that we get a, like a very clear answer like that, full stop, the future is electric. Okay, so we ran with that. But the combustion engine rumors persisted, and they persisted. And we started getting more and more reports that, okay, well, maybe there is a little something to this. So we followed up later in 2023. I can't remember the exact date. I want to say it was through the summer, maybe even into the fall. And I reached out to Dodge again, and I said, look, I mean, I know we spoke earlier, said that the future is electric. We still have all of these rumors. Is there anything you can say about this now? And it switched from no to no comment. So I'm not going to put anything else. I'm not going to put anything else into that. I'll let that this live on its own. Instead of no, it's no comment. But the rumors say the twin turbo Hurricane inline six will be in the next Charger. It will coexist with an electric Charger, which, by the way, that report that we saw also said the electric Charger will be the Charger Daytona.
Right.
The combustion powered will be the Charger. Honestly, I want to be clear. This is just rumor and speculation, but that makes sense to me. It makes sense to have one of each, especially over the last 6 months, especially where there's been what feels like a lot of cooling on EVs going forward. I mean, we've seen
from the big three, we should say specifically, not in the industry in general, it still seems they're good with EVs, but from,
yeah, but we're also seeing
Ford,
places,
GM, Stellantis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we're also seeing places like the UK that have ratcheted back some of their requirements for EVs, kind of relaxing some of those requirements going forward. So it makes sense to offer one of each. One thing that seems pretty clear through all of the rumors, no more Hellcat in the Charger. That's been largely confirmed
because it's just that era is wise, they can't do it. It just doesn't work. Real quick, I want to address a question we got. Yes. So Antoine Lee Thomas said, also, if the Charger is going back to a four door, what is happening to the Challenger? Is the Challenger going to be a four door? The answer is
that's a great question. Because I've been wondering that too, and I haven't been able to find anything out about that.
Well, if you remember a little while back, Chrysler, apparently they were showing off a four-door Chrysler electric vehicle that was not the, its name just escaped me, the 300? Airflow? No.
The Airflow. Yeah, the Airflow concept that they did?
Yeah, it was separate from that, apparently. So maybe that's what they do. Maybe Dodge gets a two-door, Chrysler gets a four-door. Don't know exactly right now.
That's a very good question, though, Antoine. Thanks for chiming in on that, because I've been wondering that as well. One thing, I wasn't going to say this, but you bring up that question. It's a great question. It's one that I've been pondering. There was a little holiday thing that Dodge did. Bruce, mm-hmm. I don't know if you maybe have that teaser.
You can talk a second. It
wasn't really a teaser. It was just a little holiday message, a little video. But there was a quick look during that video of what looks like the Charger Daytona SRT concept, and just like a 1 second glimpse.
It's got different headlights for sure.
Yes, that's the thing. It's got different headlights, right? But if you look really, really close to the back, and I don't think you can see it here in our screenshot, but if you look really, really close near that rear pillar, near that C pillar, do you see a body line coming down there that looks like it might be a small rear door? Because I caught that. I caught that earlier today. It could just be just the nature of the drawing.
I see what you're saying. And for anyone not watching, if you can see, you can't. It's kind of just behind the rear the door pull. Mm-hmm. You can just barely see it. I mean, the problem is that could be JPEG compression. That could be the artist.
There could be many things, but it may be
hard.
It made me think, could the new Charger be primarily like a two door, but have those kind of suicide opening rear doors like the Mazda RX-8 had? That might be an interesting
take. Maybe, but I don't think so. I think it's worth also pointing out that the current Charger and Challenger ride on the same platform. Yep. There is nothing saying that down the line you couldn't do a Ford, basically do the same thing again of have the Charger would be the two door and the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a classic Dodge name. I can't say Demon. The Polara. That was a Dodge, right? Or is that a Plymouth?
That was a Dodge Polara. Yep.
Okay. The Polara is the four door.
Tomas Hilton, thanks for chiming in here on the comments. Great point right here. Challenger would be a smaller, sporty two door. Remember back in the day, in the classic original muscle car era, the Charger and the Challenger were both two doors. Who's to say you can't have them both coexist? Now, admittedly, that seems pretty odd in an era where there are very few just cars, period. Never mind two doors that are generally seen as a little less convenient. But that's certainly a possibility and a very valid point. Very valid point.
Real quick, before we move on or talk about anything else, I do want to group FBC. I got to call you out real quick. Yeah. No comment is basically yes. I've done this long enough that no, it's not. Sometimes no comment is no comment that.
Yep.
They just can't say anything. That's true. And also, sorry, buddy. I got to call you out. Barracuda was a Plymouth. Barracuda was a Plymouth, not a Dodge. But it obviously they were all Chrysler products and the Barracuda shared the same body as the now I'm gonna get in trouble. Challenger? Barracuda and Challenger were twins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Anyway. You had the and I remember this. I wasn't born at this point. I'm not that old, but I'm a fan of the muscle car era, the original. And I worked with a guy that had a 1970 AAR CUDA, which was sort of like the, believe it or not, there was sort of a track focused version and not a drag strip, but like a CUDA with sway bars and things that was supposed to corner. And it had the 346 back. And that was the twin to the 70 Challenger TA.
No worries, Grupa. No worries.
we got you. We thought that'd be a good way to start 2024 because this could, and I know we're only 3 days into the year, but this is expected to debut later in 2024. I think maybe third or fourth quarter. I don't think we have it.
That's what, pinned late down third, yet. Early fourth quarter, which probably means we're going to see it summer-ish. That's generally we see a car 6-ish months before it goes on sale.
I guess it depends too. On development on Dodge's end. I honestly believe automakers also kind of go with a vibe a little bit. If things are feeling like, hey, now might be a good time to pull the sheets, let's do it. Point being, we should see it debut by the end of the year.
And it should be on sale, I think, by the end of the year.
We don't know if it debuts later in the year. I mean, it's a 2025. It's being built as a 2025 model.
Okay.
Thinking about what we've seen, especially in the electric world with various delays. I think it's safe to say it will at least debut this year. Mm-hmm. And it could be one of the biggest of the year.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it right now. It could be one of the biggest of the year, maybe the biggest of the year. It depends on what else crops up here on us, but think about how long the previous generation Charger was in existence and how popular it was.
Yeah.
and just the performance legend that became the Hellcat. Whether or not you are a Mopar person or a Dodge person, there's no denying that the 6.2 liter supercharged Hellcat V8 kind of changed everything. Mm-hmm. It really did. When it came out with 707 horsepower in this muscular looking sedan at a fairly reasonable price, and on the used market now, I mean, they're still kind of pricey, but 700 horsepower for like $30,000 in a used car, that's nothing to sneeze at. It changed the game. Mm-hmm. Ford had to play catch up. Chevrolet, GM had to play catch up, and I'm not really sure they ever did. I mean, the Camaro got to 650, and that was it. I mean, obviously the Cadillac, the Blackwings are a little bit more than that now. And of course you had the Corvette, but the Corvette and the Hellcat, they weren't, the Corvette had the power, but people weren't really cross shopping those, I don't think. So sure. Could be the biggest debut of the year. It is. I think it's time to move on.
But I'm excited for that car. You boys will have to be careful about doing the hood slide with the aero bridge vent, whatever you want to call it.
I didn't think about that. There's a good name for that. But that could be a little painful. But yeah, moving on. What else we got here? From a new car debuting this year to a truck that's
right.
So that's gone to the moon and back twice.
This is just a really cool story. This is a guy who has driven two Toyota Tundras now for nearly a million miles each. The first one did.
I want to be clear there. His first one did.
Right. I was going to get into that. So here, let me just show this nice gentleman. This is the first Tundra that he drove for a million miles. It was a 2014. Let me double check that before I get to, it was a 2007. Sorry.
It was a 2007 Tundra SR5. In 2016, I think he hit a million miles.
He hit a million miles in it. And Toyota was so impressed that they bought it back from him. This is him right there standing in front of said truck that they bought it back from him. And I don't know if we know that this is the truck that they gave him or not.
Here's the story. Pickup truck and SUV talk. Tim over there, he did all the legwork on this. I just want to give a shout out there. Cause he's talked with this gentleman. This is Victor Shepard. His original million mile Tundra was the 2007 SR5. In 2016, he hit the million miles. Toyota said, we'll trade you this truck with a million miles for a new 2016 model. So he took that trade, but he's kept that 2016 model just as his personal vehicle. He actually bought a 2014 Tundra SR5 double cab. That's the one that we're looking at now that has just rolled 900,000 miles.
He's going to hit a million in this, certainly. So this is a guy who's driven two Toyota trucks for a million miles each, which is insane.
Well, think about some of the engine videos that we've been looking at recently, where it's just catastrophic damage. These two Tundras, from what we're reading from Tim over at Pickup Truck SUV Talk, just general maintenance, basic maintenance. The 2007, I think, just had general maintenance and some transmission work. Not a replacement.
Yeah, he had to replace the alternator, and he had to have the transmission serviced. We don't know what that means at 780,000 miles.
Well, here's there's a little bit more to the story. The 2007 truck just had transmission serviced and didn't have a replacement. The engine was just maintained. The 2014 truck that he has now is 900,000 miles, regular maintenance, had to replace an alternator. Oh, gosh, darn. The transmission started giving him trouble at 780,000 miles, and he was going to have it just repaired, but apparently it was taking a little while to get get things going on the repair. So he just kept driving it. He just kept driving it. And I think it was 860,000 miles. He just went ahead and had the whole transmission replaced. So the transmission in that 2014 SR5 with the 5.7 liter V8, 860,000 miles before it was replaced. The engine, just regular maintenance. and an alternator. And it's estimated that he's going to reach 1 million miles in October of this year.
Yeah.
So when friends ask me, hey, what car should I buy? I mean, that's, you know, what are you looking for? Are you looking for something fun? Things like, but the people that are just asking me, hey, you know, I need a good car. What's a good car? I mean, this is the reason why I usually default to Toyota more often than not, because this is not the first time I've heard stories like this from Toyota.
We've covered other
not just the trucks. I mean, from the cars, we did an engine. I want to say we covered an engine teardown of a 4-cylinder Toyota. It came out of a Prius. It was an engine out of a Prius that I think had like 200,000 or 300,000 miles. That it had incurred some damage, but there was a, I forget the specific reason, but it was like, if it wasn't for that little thing, I mean, the rest of the engine was in remarkably good shape. So
they took his Tundra, and they actually studied it while developing the latest version of the Tundra, just to see, you know, kind of what wore out, what lasted, what happened. And full disclosure, I wanted to make this clear. This is not a Toyota ad. Rambling About Cars,
yeah,
to date has never had a sponsor. But it's just an interesting story of, you know, you hear someone drive, oh, I drove 1 million miles in an XYZ. Great. But then to do it in a second one as well is kind of what makes this such an interesting story.
And with just regular maintenance, anybody can drive a vehicle 1 million miles. You might have to replace 3 engines or five transmissions. What really gets me here is just regular maintenance. And in the case of this latest truck, a transmission replaced at 860,000 miles.
Yeah.
Do you know how many Tauruses I've had to replace the transmission on with like under 120,000 miles? Granted, I was driving a little harsh back then.
But it's an impressive feat.
It's an impressive feat. We wanted to mention it here on the podcast. I mean, like we've been saying recently, we want to get more of these kind of special interest stories out here to you, especially the ones that are doing well on our website. And I mean, you can read the whole story. We've got everything linked in Rambling About Cars in the YouTube description. Or if you jump over to MotorOne.com, it's probably still going to be somewhere in the top slider by the time you're hearing this, because it's you know what? It's a truck with 1 million miles. That's enough to go to the moon and back twice with some basic maintenance. A transmission at 860,000 miles. And I just want to give another shout out to Tim over at Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I mean, he knows trucks pretty darn well. He's talked with Victor a few times in the past. And yeah, just a great story. Happy to share that one. Good way to start off the new year.
Antoine Lee Thomas again, Toyota USA should give him another new Tundra, a Capstone I-Force Max, when he hits a million miles in his second Tundra. And
hey, you know what?
I agree with them. It's good marketing for them.
It wouldn't surprise me if something like that happened. And I mean, is that what it takes to just get a new vehicle every several years? Just spend your entire life driving? I can't remember what he does for a living. He has a job where he has to rush stuff to different destinations. I guess it's a time critical thing. So he's just always on the road. Totally. Always on the road.
So we want to talk about some sales. So it's the beginning of the year. It's the beginning of 2024. So we're beginning to find out a lot of the vehicle sales for 2023. We're still waiting on information from some automakers, but others have put out their announcements today. And from that, we kind of picked out some really interesting stories, and we wanted to share that stuff with you guys.
Well, I just want to say, for the United States, at least, the big takeaway here, we heard throughout 2023, things are going to get rough, economy, blah, 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 record high vehicle prices, all of this. Well, the year-end sales numbers are coming in, and they suggest that people don't give a rip about higher vehicle prices, because I haven't seen a negative year-over-year sales report from an automaker yet for the United States. Mitsubishi was close. I was looking at the numbers before the podcast.
It was like 1%. But
even Mitsubishi in the United States, just to kind of paint the picture, Mitsubishi doesn't have the presence in the United States like it once had. We've got the Outlander Sport, the Outlander Hybrid, the Eclipse Cross, and the Mirage. And of all of those, only the Outlander on the Outlander Hybrid had positive year-over-year sales. The other models declined a little bit. So basically, the Outlander and the Outlander Hybrid gave Mitsubishi its positive year growth, but it's still positive. A lot of the automakers double digit. I just got some numbers here. General Motors overall up 14%. Buick, the retirement division of General Motors, up 61%.
I didn't know it was that high. Okay,
that's,
cool.
I mean, that's not insignificant. Chevrolet up 13%. Hyundai up 11%. Nissan 22%. And what got me from Nissan, this isn't a story that we wrote, the Nissan Rogue up 45% year over year, 271,000 Nissan Rogues. I mentioned it in our Teams chat today. Is this like the most popular SUV that nobody knows about? I think we're going to do a list. Stay tuned to Motor One in the next couple days, because we're going to put together a list of the top 20 best-selling vehicles in the United States.
Sorry, Grupa. You're wrong, bud. That Buick number must include. No, this is U.S. sales only.
These are U.S. sales only. People were buying cars here this year. And we're going to put together a list of the top 20 best-selling vehicles in the United States. And I bet the Rogue is in the top 10.
Yeah,
I mean, Toyota had its numbers. I don't have Toyota's numbers in front of me, but I believe the RAV4 was upwards of like 400,000 or something. So that's probably going to be the best
460 something when I looked at it.
Yeah, that's going to be the best selling SUV probably. But more the Rogue, I think the Rogue's going to be right there in the top 10.
Smith, you're giving me the perfect segue. So we're going to keep talking about Toyota. I got to toot my own horn here. This is one of the weird sales stories we saw of the day, and it's kind of fascinating. So in the United States, unlike you, a lot of our European pals, the new Land Cruiser is not available here yet. It doesn't become available to the spring. So that means the only ones left are whatever Toyota made in 2021 before they stopped production. So we noticed Toyota sold that's the other one. Sorry, wrong vehicle. Was it five? Am I going in crazy? I might.
Toyota crazy. Sold a few Land Cruisers for 2023, yes. And we learned that there were there were still two left on dealer lots.
Correct.
You got that information from Toyota, right?
Yes, I contacted Toyota. That's we always try. Unless it's like a drag race video or something like that, we try to talk to automakers. We try to talk to the people behind things, just whatever. It's just good practice. And so I was talking with someone from Toyota, and I was, I said, oh, you guys sold seven Land Cruisers. And just kind of off the top of my head, I said, do you know how many you have left to sell? And, talked a little bit. And yeah, we have two left.
Two.
There are two, presumably 2021, because that's the last year, Land Cruisers left in this country. Unfortunately, the spokesperson I talked to can't say where they are. They just don't have, a dealer by dealer information. They just know they made this many are still out there. And so that number is two. And so we've put it on our readers. And if you also
Rambling
About Cars listeners, if you happen to be near one of the dealers that has a brand new Land Cruiser on your lot, please
brand
new
previous generation Land Cruiser 2021. Right.
Well, none of the new ones are on the lots yet, right. You don't have to worry about that at the moment. But yeah, so there are two of them somewhere in the United States, and we would love to know where, and we'd love to know, what they're selling for and what the story is, because it's just fascinating that they've sold them all except for these two.
There's two. Why haven't they sold? You've heard of Where's Waldo? Where's Land Cruiser? Okay, exactly. Find it. Put like a little red and white striped hat on the hood somewhere. Take a photo. Send it to podcast@motorone.com. We want to know where these are at. Why? Just because. We've learned that there are two brand new Land Cruisers still for sale. We want to know where they are.
Yep. Other cool thing is that the Mazda Miata had a fantastic year this year.
Yay!
Sales of the Miata, which is not a new vehicle by any shape of the imagination, was up nearly 50%. I believe it was 45% year over year.
It's even better than that, though. It's even better than that, though, because Mazda breaks out sales between just the regular MX-5 soft top and the RF hard top. The soft top was up 77.4%. And the RF the RF was up too. I think the RF was up
23,
like 22, 20, 23.
Yeah.
The percentage, I mean, I don't want to pour cold water on this fire that is the Mazda Miata. The percentage does make it sound pretty large. We're talking about 8,973 Miatas this year. So I mean, it's not a huge number, but it's still, it represents a significant year over year pop. And this is a car that came out in 2015 as a 2016 model. It's had a couple small, just small changes over the course of those years. But it's still popular. It's still in demand. Yeah. People are still out there loving life with your little two-seat roadster.
You don't expect a vehicle that has been on the market that long to have this type of sales boost seemingly out of nowhere. Because, you know, like you said, there have been small updates, but it's not like they, did something massive this year. It's just apparently more people wanted a convertible than before. And there you go.
Yeah. I mean, as we were going through all the various numbers, that one stood out. And it was just a case of, that's noteworthy. That's worth talking about. I did contact Mazda to see if we can get a breakout of how many of those are manuals versus automatics. And that's another thing I want to do a shout out here for all the Ramblers. Keep your eyes at MotorOne.com for the next few days. We're going to have a lot more information coming up, just taking deeper dives into sales, into vehicles, seeing how things are shaking out. One of those is going to be basically a state of the union, if you will, for manual transmissions. We're trying to find manual take rates for just about every car you can get in the United States with a manual. I know Mazda is looking into the Miata right now. And I also asked Mazda, do you know why sales are up 50%?
Was there a really good incentive this year, maybe?
Automakers, they pay people a lot of money to just kind of dive into insights, try to talk with consumers. So I'm legitimately interested to see what really changed this year, unless it's a case of, well, we were just able to build more because we had more parts this year. That's a perfectly valid answer, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's perfectly valid. But I found that interesting enough to want to learn a little bit more. And once we learn a little bit more, you are going to learn a little bit more.
So this is another one. This is an even more extreme version than the Mazda, because I believe it's the Mark Twain quote. There are lies, damn lies, and statistics, and basically meaning you can make statistics look however you want. So let me tell you, folks, Nissan GTR sales were up 584% last year.
What? No, Bruce, that's not correct. That can't be correct.
We sold 390 of them. But that's up over 57 last year. So again,
I mean, we're still talking a small number.
Yes, we are talking
in percentage form. I mean, but you know what? The GTR, I mean, it's also an old vehicle. I know it went through a fairly substantial update. What was it? A year ago or 2 years ago when we got that surprise facelift that was actually a fairly significant facelift that we weren't expecting. But hey, again, that stood out to us. We know that supply chain issues have been plaguing things for a while. We know sales have been down in some areas. It's not really a huge surprise that more mainstream sales are up. We've seen a lot of SUV, specific SUV models rising in sales. I think it's super interesting to see vehicles like the GTR, you know, specialty vehicles, the GTR, the Miata, they're ticking upwards in sales too. I'm really interested to see what we get from automakers like Porsche, Lamborghini.
Yeah, we don't have any of those numbers yet.
Bentley. I mean, the last year, I mean, those brands were, I mean, they were doing record sales, right? Is that still the case this year as we're seeing more mainstream automakers really stepping up? And again, I mean, most of what I've seen from automakers, double digit increases, and we still have more to come. We don't have anything from Ford yet. We don't have anything from Stellantis, which is going to be for the US,
Ram, Dodge, Jeep, and
Chrysler,
like you said, Alfa Romeo, anything from Volkswagen Group. So no VW.
Audi dropped some sales. Shortly before we logged off today, but there wasn't. Oh. I mean, they were up, but there wasn't anything that really jumped out. I take that back. The R8 was up pretty good, but again, it's sort of like the GTR. It's a limited production vehicle. I think R8 sales were 108% increase. But we're talking a few hundred
from 40
versus the previous year.
Real quick, last one we wanted to point out, and I just thought this was interesting. Acura sold 5 NSXs this year, but the two things to me that make it interesting, first off, they sold them all in January, February, and March. So they sold 3 in January, 1 in February, 1 in March, nothing after that. But I'm the one that wrote the story, so I'm kind of tooting my own horn here. What I found interesting was, so I went on to some of the popular car sales sites, and there are at least 3 more brand new NSXs available in the United States. You're going to have to pay for them, though. There is one in Florida that is currently $349,000, which is roughly double a NSX Type S's original MSRP. There are also one each in Ohio and California, and both of those have listed to contact dealer for pricing details. So who knows? But if you are a person out there and you have to have a brand new Acura NSX, there are at least 3 out of them that you can have.
And I mean, now's the time because, you know, it's on its way out, right?
Smith, do you want to do Stompers, your Toy Story, first, or do we want to talk about a cute, weird Suzuki?
Let's talk about the cute, weird Suzuki, because I tuned into the podcast last week. I wasn't able to join you on Wednesday. I was embroiled in a very loving family atmosphere, in Northwestern Illinois. And shout out to my brother-in-law and his wonderful family for hosting us. We went to Medieval Knights. Have you ever heard of that place?
It's not medieval.
Sorry, okay, medieval times.
Yeah, okay. I've heard of it. I've never been to one.
We went at night. It's basically a big jousting arena where you watch people joust while you eat dinner. It was a wonderful time.
You eat turkey legs, and there's a red side and a blue side.
Turkey legs, no silverware. It was an awesome time. I'm a little sidetracked here. That's what I was doing while you were prepping up the podcast and all that. But you had some really cool, quirky vehicles that you talked about last week. So I'm glad that we have this one to talk about, because it is just... it's a van, but it's a truck, but it almost has a side-by-side vibe in some ways, and it's just cool. Tell us about it.
Yep. So this is the Suzuki Super Carry. That's the name of the model, and this is the mountain trail concept, and it will be debuting at the Tokyo Auto Salon, just like the 2 Suzukis that we saw last week from Damned. This is actually from Suzuki, though, and they basically took their Super Carry and they modified it a bunch to go off-road. So you can see, the image that we're looking at here is the only image available right now. So I can't wait until the show starts. I believe it's the 13th. And so we'll get to see more. But I believe it's slightly lifted, but it definitely has a skid plate. It's got recovery hooks. It's got that LED light bar. It's got an external roll cage. It's got cargo bins. It just looks fun as hell. And just to put this into perspective, so anyone watching on YouTube, you are looking at the mountain trail concept now of the Super Carry. And here is what a standard Super Carry looks like. I'm going to show you right now. It'll be right here on the left. So you can see they took what was there and just beefed it up a whole bunch. And it's adorable. And I want one. And you're right. It does look like a side-by-side. It is a K car. So that means it has a, I believe it's a six. I believe this
I want to clarify. It's a K car. It has an K-E-I, not like the K car from,
from Chrysler in the 80s. No, it is. Yes, it is a Japanese K car. It has a naturally aspirated 658cc engine that makes 50 horsepower and 44 pound-feet of torque. However, these things are surprisingly capable off-road. So there is an available, then this is on the regular Super Carry, and I have to imagine they used the top spec one for this concept. We don't know, but it would only make sense given what we're seeing here. And I'm scrolling through the Japanese site now for anyone who is watching on YouTube. But they have an push-button four-wheel drive system. So they're usually rear-wheel drive. You press the button, you get four-wheel drive. They also have a locking differential. So even though it's little and it doesn't have a lot of power, off-road, it should be pretty capable. And even if it's not, it just looks fun as hell. So, yeah.
I'm with Group FBC, though. I need to see if this will do a stoppy, just because it is so oddly shaped. And I know that it's an off-road version, but man, I would feel a little uncomfortable in any situation where there might be an incline. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like
it's gonna, what's the word? Tip over and just roll constantly down any sort of.
But that's why you've got the external roll cage there. So, you know,
it doesn't make it any better, Bruce. It protects the sheet metal. Meanwhile, I take that back. It looks like they have some pretty gnarly seats with 5-point harnesses in there, which again, is that supposed to make me feel better? It just means that I need to be extra secure in this vehicle.
Yeah. I just thought it was cute and cool. Oh, and we got some good comments about it. And
it is adorable. I will fully admit that it is absolutely adorable.
But here you go. Let's talk about Stompers, which
you kind of
teased to us a little bit. This is the second part in your toy series. And I should say, you and I were talking about this today. I think I'm going to be writing one of these a few weeks in the future. It definitely won't be next week, but I've got some car toys that you and I were talking about. So I think I might be a guest writer on this, yes, in a few weeks in the future.
Well, there's a YouTuber I watch, MGo316, he has a catchphrase. He does a lot of toy reviews, Transformer reviews, things like that. And he has a phrase, and I'm going to see if I get it right here. You don't stop playing with toys when you grow older. You grow older because you stop playing with toys. So this is my effort to be forever young. And yes, this is a series that I'm hoping to keep going. It's off to a slower start, but we're getting some commenters coming in on the articles. Go to motor1.com, Ramblers. Go to motor1.com to search up Stompers and chime in with a comment. Let me know what you think on this stuff. This, for those not of the Gen X era, this is probably a late Gen X, early millennial thing. Stompers came in the very early 1980s, just as the big monster truck craze of the United States was taken off. I barely remember those. Well, I don't remember the early days because that was just before my time. But I remember like 83, 84. I remember getting one of these sets for Christmas.
Okay.
So that made it. I remember getting it and being excited. So that made it a big deal. But oddly enough, I don't ever remember playing with these play sets. And to let you know what we're talking about, Stompers were very small, and I'm going to say maybe like a little bit bigger than Hot Wheels. So maybe
Hot Wheels.
Maybe 1/40th, 1/50th scale, somewhere around there. Just little electric toy trucks with big wheels like you'd have with monster trucks. There's a little electric motor in there. You put in a single AA battery. There's a little tiny light bulb that lights up front that makes the headlights glow. The original first generation models were just a single speed. You just turned it on, you put it down, you let it go. That was it. That's how boring we were in the early 80s. It didn't turn. It wasn't remote control. You just turned on the switch and let it go. And it had little foam tires that actually did really well climbing over stuff.
You can see the little motor on that one there.
That's one from my collection that's a little broken. I don't know how it happened. The motor is there. There are no gears. I suppose I could try to source some gears and put it back together. Don't know if I will. I have three stompers, and these are actually the second generation stomper twos. They had wider tires and they had two speeds plus neutral. So you could turn it on. And if you just wanted to push it around, like you would do with the Hot Wheels, you just push it around with the light on.
I was about to ask, why would you ever need neutral? And then you immediately explained it.
Yeah. Okay. Just push it around, or you put it in low range because four-wheel drive, or you put it in high range to go faster. I have three stompers, and then I have two knockoffs that came out at the same time.
They made knockoff stompers?
Yes. I remember this being huge. In fact, this was so huge, I even mentioned it in my story. My brother, who was 13 years older than me, would take these, and he would cut the body apart and rewire it to take a 9-volt battery instead of a double A. And
that's gotta be a power upgrade.
Yeah, when you're a 6-year-old, having a battery sticking up through the body is like an adult with a blower sticking up through the hood of the car, right? It was cool. But then as I was writing up the story, I found that, you know what? Some of these stinking stompers are going for like $500 in used condition, like the green Chevy we're looking at right now. So I'm a little miffed that he cut up all my original stompers, because I don't have any of the first gen. And I remember having some as a kid, but I don't have any now. But anyways, wrote up this story because this is in my collection here. I found the original play sets. I found the stompers. In the name of preserving this part of automotive history in America, I took it upon myself to set up one of the tracks and put some batteries in the stompers to see if they still work. I spent an hour trying to get them to traverse the course. And as we're looking at photos right now, that hour of intense research that was not at all an adult man playing with toys, I could not get a single clean run. Not a single clean run. I don't know if it's because those rubber tires are like 40 years old and they aren't really that rubbery anymore. The track was designed to where, you have little obstacles to go over, and then there's 180 degree turns that it just bounces around the turn. So in theory, you have those turns on both ends. It just goes up and down the track, right? It sounds kind of boring today, and it is.
It actually doesn't. It sounds kind of fun.
It was neat setting it all up, and I found a bag. I think most of the parts are still there. It was just a Ziploc bag that I found. And the parts were like everything from like little dowel pins and rubber washers so you could screw the track together and actually screw it tight enough to where it would make a hill. You didn't need to set it up on anything. Okay. It would just be tight enough together where it could form up a little hill. And then you just have little obstacles and things to put on there. Set it all up, had some fun with it, reminisced about the days gone by, and stompers were one of those things. I had completely forgotten about these until I found this set at my parents' house. I completely forgotten about them. But then once I found them,
I'm looking, and I thought I was pretty good on toy companies, but I've never even heard of Shaper either. So
Shaper, they were bought, I believe, by Tyco.
Okay.
Sometime in the mid 80s.
And here's the thing about stompers. Tyco was into all of the radio control stuff.
It came on just like a firestorm with the monster truck craze, like back in the day when you had Bigfoot and USA1, like through the early 80s, those trucks were everywhere. It was almost like professional wrestling in an automotive venue, because you got these big trucks with big tires, we're driving over cars, rah! and they were everywhere. And these toys took advantage of that. But it disappeared almost as quickly as it blew up. There were some Stomper. There were lots of offshoots. They did like drag racing cars, Stomper drag racing cars, which had slick tires and didn't have anything to do with off-road. Mm-hmm. They made versions with big paddle tires that could go on water. And then they made much larger versions, just larger. And I found there were some various offshoots that were made into the 90s, but the fad really died down, through the mid and late 80s. So it was like a flash in the pan, boom, and then they were gone. But as I found just doing some research, the folks that remember these, they really remember them and they really love them. And I was shocked at some of the values I was seeing just for some of these cars. The play sets don't seem to be that interesting to people. But yeah, I found a completed eBay auction. Two original first gen Stompers, still new in their card, with a carrying case, $1,200.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. $1,200. So, I mean, these are things, yeah, a lot of people haven't heard of them. Those, even from the era, may not remember them until you see it. But, I mean, that's what happened to me. And, you know, hey, they're in my collection. I did put all the track back away. I just don't have enough space in the basement, at least right now, to keep everything all set up. But Stompers are still in the display case behind me. So,
cool.
And more to come on this series, Bruce. I would love to open this up to other people at Motor One. In fact, I've talked with a couple other people that might be interested in jumping into some of their old toys. I would love to see your Micro Machines.
Yeah, we were talking about that, Micro Machines, and I had a few other suggestions for you that I'm not gonna let people know about. But also, I want to say real quick, I will have a kind of a similar story to this going up this coming weekend on Motor One. I'm not going to tell anyone what it is because I want you to read it, but it is about one of the earliest driving arcade games ever made.
I'd never heard of it.
I will say it came from 1977. And to put that in perspective, Space Invaders, which is kind of a hallmark of arcades, came out in 1978. So it precedes Space Invaders by even a year. And this is a first-person driving game. So that'll be going up for me this weekend. And I kind of have a feeling we might be talking about it on the show next week.
I absolutely hope so. And Ted Adam Green, I just want to address your comment, the tire treads are phenomenal. They are indeed phenomenal. They were very good at somehow gripping the vertical, very slick, sheer plastic sides of the track, but yet they couldn't grip onto the little grippy stone obstacles on the track. So it was a frustrating time. I at least wanted one clean lapper on that course, and I couldn't get it from any of them. Yeah. And I want to
know. It sounds good. An hour of fun.
I enjoyed the photography more than anything. I enjoyed setting up the camera, trying to get some interesting photos, some interesting shots. I enjoyed that more than anything. I've got a new macro lens coming for the camera that I'm going to try out this weekend to work on my other venture, which may or may not be mentioned here on Rambling About Cards at some point. If you love scale models, I'm trying to do something special there. We're going to get that launched hopefully a little bit later. I want to address a comment that Antoine dropped a while ago, talking about the GTR. Thanks for jumping in on the comments. Antoine says, that blows my mind with the GTR. Remember when the GTR came out years ago at $60,000? A couple of model years later, it jumps up $50,000, making it a six-figure vehicle, with the Nismo version of the GTR being $200,000. Insane. It is kind of one of those, is that much time gone by moments, isn't it, Bruce? I mean, I remember when the GTR first came out, and it was like,
so do I.
You know, it was an impressive car at a fairly reasonable price. I mean, 60 grand 10 years ago.
It was kind of a Corvette.
Never mind more than that.
Launched.
Yeah.
Like, it was, you know, it was right there with a Corvette when it launched. Not anymore, but, you know, I mean, I'm talking like a base Corvette, but Yeah. It's still around. It's been around for years.
It's been a ride.
Regarding the GTR, it's old enough now to get a driving permit in some states. You know what? You're not wrong.
Not wrong.
Yeah.
Not wrong at all.
But I think that's going to do it for the show tonight, everybody. Thank you so much for all your comments. Smith, is there anything that we need to tell the folks about?
Well, I mean, as we said in previous podcasts, we are looking at some changes here for the show. Yes. If you have any input of what you would like to see, we're going to try doing more, like I said, more of the, what we call the evergreen features, the everything we know, some of the interesting lists that we're putting together, things that we're spending a little bit more time research on at Motor One. We want to bring that to the Ramblers as well. So, I mean, that's one thing you can expect coming forward. We're also talking about maybe switching the time slots around a little bit. So that's something we would really, really like to hear from you, Ramblers.
That's something you and I have kind of debated back and forth. We want to go earlier, but we don't know how much earlier we want to go. 7:30, because our show oftentimes is hour and a half. By the time we're done, it's about 9 p.m. For each of us. Kind of want to get done a little bit earlier, but we also still want to be able to have you folks listen with us. So it's a balance.
The Ramblers live, you are part of the show.
Yeah.
So let us know. And for the audio listeners, also let us know. Email podcast@motorone.com. Mm-hmm. Is there a time where you think you would like to see Rambling About Cars live? Tossing around some different time slot ideas. We want to hear from you. Let us know. Bruce and I, we're based in Eastern Time Zone, United States. I know we have listeners all over the world, and that blows my mind, and it hits me right here in the heart to know that we have listeners all around the world. We really appreciate that. We would love to be live for everybody everywhere all at once, to steal a riff from a very good movie, by the way.
I haven't seen that one yet. I need to watch that one.
That it's just like awesomeness all around, all at once.
Cool.
Give us some feedback. I feel pretty confident we're going to switch up the time slots a little bit, but we want to make it work best for all the Ramblers out there. We don't want to lose our audience that
alienate that people we love, either. And so, yeah, we just got to figure out the right time. Again, tell us what you like. Before the show, Smith, you were telling me someone that a family member of yours listened to the show, and they weren't necessarily a fan of, like, when we talk about supercars. And, you know, we talked about that. Yeah, maybe we should talk less about. So seriously, tell us what you like, and we'll kind of tailor the show to the audience, because
absolutely.
I'll be totally honest. I don't love talking about supercars, because to me, it's something that I'm very I know I'm never going to have enough money to own. And in all likelihood, I'm probably never going to see one. But there are vehicles like new Lamborghinis or Ferraris or Porsches where we feel like they're big enough brands where we have to talk about them.
You can look at them. You can dream a little bit.
Get lower down and kind of those tiers, you know. Things get a little bit more complicated. So just give us some feedback. Tell us what you like. Feel free to email us. Like Smith said, podcast@motorone.com. Yeah. We just love to hear what you want. With that, I think that's going to be the show for tonight. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We're going to sign off for now, but we will see you next week. So talk to you then.
Happy New Year, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, Happy New Year. Yeah.